Welcome.
Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Tuesday, August 21st edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next hour and 5 hour and 10 minutes or so as we go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Glad to have you with me for what should be a great Tuesday edition of the show here. We'll start things off with Brian Blessing, the host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline. We're at chat NFL preseason week 3. Yes, it's the dress rehearsal. Yes, if you're playing the Bang the Book Radio drinking game, you've already had one drink because I've said dress rehearsal. There's number two. We'll talk about week 3 here of the preseason. A lot of considerations there with that. Then also with Brian, we'll chat about the Northern Trust. That is the first event of the FedEx Cup playoffs. That's coming up here this weekend at Ridgewood Country Club in New Jersey. So we'll get some thoughts from him on that tournament. Second half of today's show, we'll be joined by Rolf Michaels, professional handicapper over at wagertalk.com. Once again, we'll talk NFL preseason real quickly with him. Then we'll get into some college football stuff, looking at the week 0 lines. We have seen a line movement here already. And then also taking a look at the Sun Belt Conference. We'll take a deep dive into that group of 5 league, which now has divisions and a conference title game for the first time this season. Over at bangthebook.com, tons and tons of stuff, as I told you on yesterday's show. My MLB picks and tips piece up every day, updated. Big card here today, but small amount of plays for me. I've got a college football home field advantage piece, college football power ratings, week 0 opening line report. We've got other MLB content from Alan Moody. NBA team previews are rolling out. I think we got about 20 or so of those up already. We'll have NHL team previews very soon. Golf, NASCAR, UFC, you name it, we got it over at bangthebook.com, where we are your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. Don't forget about those free pick contests where you can win cash prizes. You sign up for those. You get our daily newsletter, but then you also get the chance to win those cash prizes. Don't forget about that promo code over at DSI Sportsbook, BANG100. 100% deposit match bonus for the redesigned sportsbook over there. And, of course, over at bangthebook.com, you can check out all of the sportsbook reviews that we have over there. All right, let's go ahead and get this thing started here. We'll bring on our first guest. That is Brian Blessing, the host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline. Brian, how's it going today, man?
Oh, hey, Adam, how you doing? I'll tell you what, the Sun Belt, I can't wait to hear you do that. I love the Sun Belt. I love the MAC. I love the smaller conferences. It's entertaining football, and honestly, you know, they are teams you want to start focusing on now, because when we get to the back third of the season, they're highlighted with standalone weeknight games, and you best to know what you're dealing with early, because you're going to be looking at those games when you get to the fall. And these smaller conference teams, like the Sun Belt, like the MAC, they are live dogs in terms of cover numbers against some of the power brokers they get to play early in the year.
No, definitely, and that's something we talk about a lot here on this show, is that, you know, the odds makers and pretty much everybody else out there knows about Alabama and Ohio State and Oklahoma and Georgia and, you know, all these blue blood types of teams. And yeah, people want to bet those games because they're in prime time and they're exciting and those are the sexy teams and all that. But we drive this point home. We've done it since we started these with the college football podcast back in 2013. The true value in college football is in those group of 5 leagues, because You're playing against a lower percentage of the market. You're playing against, you know, softer lines. You're playing against, you know, less efficient situations. There's a lot of value in those group of 5 leagues.
Oh, there's no doubt. And there are these hidden gems and little nuggets. And you get a team like Liberty jumping into the Sun Belt. And, you know, what are we going to be looking at with these guys? Well, Turner Gill's got basically the team he had, everybody back next year. So the transition for them, it'll be interesting to watch a team like that, how they fare and what the odds makers will do with them.
Well, of course, Turner Gill, a guy you're familiar with. He was the head coach at Buffalo for a little while. Let's chat some NFL preseason here, though. We've got one game Thursday, 6 games coming up on Friday, whole bunch on Saturday, couple on Sunday. So really, really spread out here for week 3 of the preseason. And you know, I guess before we take a look ahead, let's take a look back at last night's game between Baltimore and Indianapolis. And again, even though it's the preseason, getting as good of a number as you possibly can is very important. That number last night closed 2 at MyBookie, 2 at Pinnacle, 1.5 at 5 Dimes in Bovada. There were other places where it closed 1.5. Baltimore wins 20-19. Again, as we know, nobody wants to play overtime in the preseason. So the value of a key number a little bit different here, but you know, if you got it early, if you were among the 80% or so that got it early, you got a winner, but if you waited it out, you didn't. So still important, even in the preseason, to get the best number you can.
No, knock on wood, I had Baltimore plus one. And when, and then it was, you know, ridiculous that, you know, basically the Ravens, you know, should have covered that game for chuckles. It was like the Hall of Fame game all over again, fumbling punts and turnovers all over the place. But when it came to the end, when it was plus one, it's amazing the difference of what when you're watching the game. I had the plus one, so I'm sitting there rooting for him to stop the two-point conversion. If you were on the other side of that where it was minus one or minus one and a half, you were rooting for the Colts to get the two-point conversion because it was the only way Baltimore would be motivated to go down and get a field goal and get you to kick the, and get the cover.
It's just, it's crazy. You know, I mean, it's again, one of those things where the number doesn't matter until it does, basically, because a lot of times, you know, you're not going to be that close to the number, but then in this situation in the preseason here, you basically fall right on the closing number here for this one. So again, very important here at this time of the year to get the best numbers that you can. And when you look at the NFL preseason, we knew money would come in on Baltimore. John Harbaugh's 31-12 now straight up in the preseason. We knew money was going to hit the board on the Ravens. If you liked the Ravens, you had to get them early. If you liked the Colts, sit there, wait it out. And of course, if you got one and a half or two, you picked up a winner there on the Colts. But, you know, Brian, it's just, this is such an important thing here. We talk about the differences between handicapping and betting here on the show. This is a betting concept of understanding and having a feel for where the market is going to go. Baltimore wins in the preseason. That line was going to move. You've got to be proactive instead of reactive in this business.
And that was part of it, Adam, that, okay, Baltimore likes to win. I mean, it is clearly part of it. But the other thing is, at the end of the day, in the rotation, actually, even more favorable, RG3 is actually playing at a pretty high level. And he ran around out there in the entire second half, you know, making plays. Lamar Jackson is, boy, that's a work in progress. I mean, he's got speed, and there's some serious growing pains there. That's going to take a while to get him up to snuff there to be the heir apparent. And, you know, the one thing it's done, it's given Flacco a kick in the pants. Flacco actually looks pretty good, but that being said, he still remains a pylon in the pocket.
Let's look at this Thursday night game here then between Philadelphia and Cleveland. Excuse me, Buffalo and Cleveland played last week, but we got Philadelphia and Cleveland here on Thursday night. This one was Cleveland minus two at open. It's 3.5 or 4 out there market wide now. Doug Peterson did come out this morning and say, hey, Nick Foles is going to play, but obviously they're not going to risk Nick Foles very much because they don't even know if Carson Wentz will be ready for week one. And right now, I think the expectation is that he probably won't be. So again, this is one of those situations where you have to get a feel for what's going to happen in this game. For Cleveland, Tyrod Taylor is probably going to play a quarter and a half, maybe the whole first half. Baker Mayfield will play probably a quarter and a half, two quarters himself. We won't probably see much of Drew Stanton. I doubt we see Brogan Robach in this one either. So we know that Cleveland's going to be Tyrod Taylor and Baker Mayfield. Philadelphia will be Nate Sudfeld and Joe Callahan again. Maybe Nick Foles plays a quarter or so, but after last week, they're not going to risk him. So again, being proactive here, yeah, the value of 3 and 4 doesn't mean as much in the preseason as it would in the regular season, but still, this was a line move that you could see coming from a mile away.
No, there's no doubt. And, great. Yeah, Foles is going to play. But, well, this is not a normal dress rehearsal for the Eagles. I mean, their heart dropped when he got hurt last week because, you know, Wentz could very well be ready to go for the opener. I know the optimum plan for them is to ease him back, give every day is helpful to him. If they can get out of the gate with Foles for 2, 3, 4 games, that'd be great. You know, it may be Wentz in the opener, and it's not that big a deal. Clearly, I can't see Foles playing more than maybe 2 series. But what's the point? I mean, you're going to expose him to Myles Garrett? Garrett is the guy that took A.J. McCarron out. And the Browns' first defensive unit actually looked pretty good. So, yeah, I mean, this goes back to the first preseason game featuring the Eagles. You had Pittsburgh catching a field goal with the quarterback rotation of Landry Jones and Mason Rudolph, you know, going against Nate Sudfeld. I mean, we're right back there. I would look at the under at the game, to be honest with you. I think, Mayfield came back to earth a little bit last week. He looks pretty good. And Tyrod Taylor is Tyrod Taylor. You know, he's good, but he has his limitations. I would look for the Eagles to really try to, if they're going to get anything out of this game, it's going to be to make sure that that number one defense is playing well. So I'd look to the under.
Yeah, we're seeing a little bit of under money here in this one, down from 42.5 to 41.5 at Pinnacle. And again, when you want to look for early week moves, you want to look at some of the sharper books that are out there, like a Pinnacle, like a Bookmaker, like a Matchbook, which is an offshore exchange. Those are where you're going to see, you know, where we can expect some of these lines to go here as we go throughout the week. So, Brian, I think you're onto something there, especially, well, what's interesting to me here in this one is that in week one, Todd Haley kind of let Tyrod Taylor and Baker Mayfield throw it around a little bit, wanted to see what those two guys had. As it turned out, Mayfield had to throw on the run probably a little bit more than they wanted him to. Week two, it was about establishing the run. The Browns ran the football very well against Buffalo. They had a lot more running plays than passing plays. Now you kind of wonder, will we see balance from them in this game, or will we see them keep trying to push the run? So, you know, it's always fun to try and figure out what these coordinators want to focus on. And again, very important for our listeners out there, read the news reports, read Twitter. These coaches and coordinators are going to tell you these things. Maybe they haven't told you yet, but they're going to as we go throughout the week here. You know, there aren't a whole lot of secrets in the preseason, so really important to look to take advantage of that.
Well, and, you know, the other thing is, too, maybe to a degree for Cleveland, they try to get a little chemistry with, you know, with Taylor and Josh Gordon. You know, Gordon's part of this now, but, you know, I think in that particular instance, I think everything we said holds true that, you know, kind of like what both defenses bring to the table here. Man, I'm telling you, Adam, it's the games have actually been, I will say this, moderately more entertaining, but it's just torture to watch these games with, you know, the Cowboys, you know, Zach Martin, to get it, you know, a lucky break that this guy's not lost for the season. You know, McCarron gets hurt. They lose Kyle Williams. The Bills did. And you watch these games, and impact players are going down in these nonsensical, meaningless games. It's the nature of the beast every year, but teams' fortunes will change. Hey, you watched that game last night. I would even think, you know, as we get further on into the schedule, and we'll get there eventually, you know, we talked about Baltimore last night. The thing, when you're watching Indy, you know, what is Andrew Luck? What is he going to bring to the table? And, you know, the bottom line is, you know, he wasn't sharp. I think he'll shake off the rust. But you're watching that game, I mean, he's getting pummeled, and their running game is nothing. So, you know, you look at it. I mean, had Luck come out last night and swung it all over the place and looked really good. Personally, I think you could have seen an impact. Week one lines, you know, maybe some thoughts on their season win totals. But Indy remains such a wild card because you just don't know right now, you know, what Luck is actually going to be this year.
Well, and that was something I wanted to ask you here, a general overview of week three, and then we'll touch on some of the games that, you know, it sounds like you've got some games of interest here later on in the week. But is this still the dress rehearsal week that we build it up to be? I mean, is this still a thing where, you know, the starters are going to play three quarters of some of these games? I mean, look, Green Bay has already put Aaron Rodgers, in charge of the scout team. So the expectation is that he's not going to play at all this week or next
number.
Week. Right,
well,
yeah, the numbers going from 3 to 7. And Five Dimes even showing 7.5 now on Oakland. So do we prop this dress rehearsal up to be more than it actually is? Because these coaches don't want to get these guys hurt.
Well, most of them do. Most of them are morons. It's unbelievable. You know, it is a copycat league. I've been saying for years, it goes back to a game 4 or 5 years ago. It was week two, and the Patriots were playing Tampa Bay, down in Tampa Bay. Brady's out there, and they got a punt. They get the ball at their own 6-yard line with 1:10 to go in a preseason game. All right, you kneel down, go to the locker. Brady takes him right down the field and scores. Week two, he comes out and starts the third quarter, goes right down the field and scores. And he did it again against the Eagles. It's a copycat league. It makes complete sense. Why wouldn't other teams copy what Belichick does, because he does it better than any of them? It makes sense to me for teams with legitimate, experienced teams to do the dress rehearsal in week two. Are you telling me Tom Brady or Aaron Rodgers, because they're not sharp in week three, aren't going to be good in the opener? If you're better served to give them their playing time, get out there, face some live bullets in week two, because if anybody were to get nicked up, you're giving them 3 weeks to possibly get mended for the opener. But most of these teams do this dress rehearsal. You watch how many guys drop like flies this week.
And that's the saddest part. I mean, I know that a lot of teams and players have kind of talked about, hey, you know, let's cut this preseason down to 2 games. And, you know, I mean, there's really no reason for us to play 4. And, of course, if you play the Hall of Fame game like Baltimore and Chicago this year, you're playing 5 preseason games.
That's a curse.
It's astonishing to me.
That's a curse to play in the Hall of Fame game.
Well, and the thing of it is now, too, is, you know, when I was looking at this with regards to Baltimore yesterday when we were breaking down the Monday Night Football game with Joe Everett, Baltimore plays back-to-back games now 5 days apart. They play here on Saturday, and then they play again Thursday in that final preseason game. Now, no one's going to play in that final preseason game, but still, the fact remains that you're playing 3 games in 10 days. It's insane to me. I don't get it.
It's the NFL. It's preseason. It's a money grab. No, I mean, it's that simple. And now the big thing is, again, week three, again, if the majority of starters are going to play this week, an elongated period of time, albeit we'll see what happens before this week's games are played because the league's going to meet on this. But basically, guys that have played a series or two are now going to be out there playing half or into the third quarter of games, and they haven't been out there dealing with this helmet rule. So, I mean, you could see a truckload of these helmet rule calls this week because you got a whole wave of guys, albeit starters, but they're out there, you know, playing a lot and getting a feel for what this helmet thing is.
So I know you mentioned on Thursday here that you're kind of looking at Philadelphia and Cleveland under the total. And as I said, that one is starting to move a little bit towards that under, especially because, as we mentioned already, probably seems like Nick Foles won't play a whole lot. Philadelphia is going to want to get in and get out, and that's going to be their goal, is just to leave this game healthy. What about Friday, Saturday, and Sunday here? Anything on your radar that you're looking to play?
Yeah, I would kind of look at Carolina, to be honest with you. You know, Newton's probably going to play half of that game. And Gilbert actually has looked pretty good in the preseason. And we know Brady's done. Basically, Carolina kind of looks like a spot you'd look into there just based on everything we've already talked about. The San Francisco Indy game, I'd kind of look at Indy, to be honest with you. Luck did not look good. I mean, if we're going to sit here and say, well, the big mystery with Indy this season is what is Andrew Luck? Well, I got news for you. They're going to let this guy shake the rust off in this game because he was 6 of 13, 50 yards in a red zone pick. And Brissett actually looked okay. So Brissett's a guy that got a lot of playing time last year, going to be going against backups. But I would be looking for Indy to be trying to get Andrew Luck some serious confidence in this game. I don't think this is a throwaway game for Indy in any way, shape, or form.
I think that's a really interesting one there. It's game 271-272 Saturday afternoon, 4:30 kickoff in Indianapolis, because I think money comes in on San Francisco in that spot. Everybody loves Jimmy Garoppolo. This is the dress rehearsal for Garoppolo and Shanahan together. And you've got Indianapolis on this quick turnaround, short week, in a standalone spot on Monday Night Football. They did not look very good, particularly Andrew Luck. So I think that's one of those games there where if I had to, you know, sort of put my my prognosticator hat on and look at the movement in the market for that game, I think San Francisco probably closes a road favorite, which is rare to see a team like that making a long trip wind up being a possible road favorite there. But I think that, you know, that may be a little bit of a contrarian point of view from you to look at Indianapolis, but I think that you're on the right track too, because that's another important thing to figure out. Yeah, it's the dress rehearsal. Yeah, you want to iron out this and this and that. But also, if you looked bad in week two, this is pretty much your last chance to look good because none of the starters are going to play. So there's a little bit more of a motivating factor there too.
Well, and again, I mean, it's not that, you know, Garoppolo hasn't looked really good. You know, and Beathard hasn't been horrible. But again, I think, you know, there's the case, oh, you want to get Garoppolo as much work as you need. Well, listen, Garoppolo's a starter. Garoppolo's gotten all those preseason snaps in the past. He looked good at the end of the year last year. I think San Francisco, and if he plays a half, so be it. I don't know that Garoppolo would even go that deep, to be honest with you. I think there's legitimate urgency for Indy to get Andrew Luck going. You know, on paper, about who's the better team and, you know, who's been playing better. But again, it's a preseason game, and what are these guys trying to accomplish? I think that's the difference, Adam, with preseason. You know, we get to the over. Well, what's the goal? You're trying to win a football game. You know, these games, what's the goal? I mean, you're trying to, what is the coach's goal? He's trying to evaluate talent and determine his final roster. So in this game, I would think Frank Reich's goal is to get Andrew Luck some confidence, get a running game going. Well, maybe they're just not capable of it. But from a motivation aspect, I mean, would you have a motivation in the preseason? That's a coin flip, right? I mean, if there's sincere sense of motivation and urgency for Indy to find out, can this guy get back on the beam?
One more game I want to talk about here real quickly for the preseason, and then we'll transition over to the golf side and talk Northern Trust for a couple of minutes. Cincinnati and Buffalo here Sunday afternoon in Western New York. You got Buffalo 1.5-point favorite out there market wide, and taking on Cincinnati here, when you look at the coaches' records by week for the preseason, there is one outlier that stands out in dramatic fashion. The only guy that is terrible in week three of the preseason is Marvin Lewis, who is 4-11 straight up. I think a lot of this simply has to do with the fact that if you're not doing well in week three of the preseason, the dress rehearsal week, either you're a bad coach or you've got a bad team, which is the reason why we don't have a lot of coaches here that have really bad records in week three of the preseason. But obviously for Buffalo, the AJ McCarron injury with his collarbone, you've got Josh Allen, you've got Nathan Peterman. What do you think about that one with Buffalo laying a very short price at home?
The one thing I would say here, there's this bizarre dynamic that will be in play, and that is Andy Dalton could throw a touchdown pass in this game, and the place will erupt. Andy Dalton is a hero in Buffalo for the pass he threw last year, to the point where the Bills fans sent his foundation through the roof with $400,000 worth of donations. And then Dalton and his wife just made a donation to Roswell Park in Buffalo, thanking the people of Buffalo. This guy's walking in here. So it forget the crowd. It's a preseason game. But Dalton, they're going to be rooting, seriously, for Dalton to, you know, succeed. The other side of the coin, and I wouldn't sleep on this if there was an element of fear. Oh, my God, they lost to McCarron. We don't want to get somebody killed here. Well, McCarron, as it turns out now, did not break his collarbone, and he's not going to play this week, but he's going to be available to them. So the fear of getting somebody hurt maybe is minimized because McCarron's not out for 6-8 weeks. But you are literally having Josh Allen starting this game, controlling his destiny to be the starter of this football team, and he's looked really good. He took great strides forward last week. This place is going to be jacked to see Allen playing with the starters. And then, pending what he does in the first half, Nathan Peterman is not out of the mix to be the starter in the second half, and Peterman has played phenomenal in the preseason. And both of these guys stretch the field. It's actually a marginally compelling game to watch, but the Bills are trying to determine who will their starting quarterback be, and to me, that means throw the football. You know, McCoy's nursing, a groin injury this week. Why would you even throw him out there? And the kid Murphy, the running back, has been going nuts for him. Yeah, you don't want to expose McCoy to injury. I think the quarterbacks are going to be the featured performers in this game.
All right, let's transition over to the golf side here for a couple of minutes. Because we've got the first event of the FedEx Cup playoffs, this is the Northern Trust, formerly known as the Barclays. That's probably how most people still know it, even though it's been the Northern Trust here for, I believe, 3 years now. This one's at Ridgewood Country Club. It hasn't been there since 2014. This is an event that does rotate around. So in terms of course form data, we don't really have a whole lot of that. So, Brian, I'll ask you, do you prefer to have course form data and know how these guys have recently done on a certain track? Or do you like not having that because then you've got a little bit more of an emphasis on recent form and, you know, maybe just kind of some additional edges in terms of handicapping the course because you know these players so well?
Well, I think that when we're to the playoffs, we're talking about the best players in the world, albeit Fowler with the oblique and Rory aren't playing. 125 players are, the top 100 advanced. Doing homework on the course, 73-85 in terms of distance. There are three par fives. It's a par 71. But here's the word coming out of Paramus. And, you know, you think the Bombers have been the guys that have been stealing the show of late. That's not necessarily the case here. Their mantra at this course is straight is long. So playing from the fairway in this event, when they come on the air Thursday and you watch this, the rough is penal. They have had a lot of rain there, and the rough is high and shaggy, and no rain is in the forecast. So the greens are going to be fast and firm, and if you're in the rough, good luck to you holding greens. So being straight off the tee is way more important than hitting it a million miles here. And I'm not saying I'm playing them, but that would bring a Zach Johnson, different guys into the equation. You don't have to be the long ball hitter. I look at this, and we saw Billy Horschel do it. You know, the best player doesn't always win the playoffs. You know, the reality is, Adam, it's a matter of getting hot at the right time. I mean, think of Billy Horschel when he won this thing. You know who's been invisible all year long? I've already made a small play on him. Is Matt Kuchar. He's been invisible this year, and he's 40-1. This is a guy who was always in the 20-1 range. You know, I mean, he can salvage a season, and he's not the longest hitter, but he's the guy that can hit fairways. So fairways is paramount, which makes Tiger's prospects in this event, you know, a lot tougher, unless he's taking the driving iron, because he's only hitting 55% of the fairways. So the Tiger's got to play from the short grass. He's 16-1.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, the fact that we've seen some money hit the board here on Jordan Spieth. When I wrote up my preview, Jordan Spieth was about 20-1. Now he's about 16.5-1. That makes sense because he's not one of the Bombers like a Dustin Johnson, like a Jason Day, that type of player. He's a guy that, you know, hits it a little bit more accurately off the tee, sacrificing a little bit of distance. So I'm not surprised to see a guy like him on the move. You mentioned a guy like Matt Kuchar. I think that makes some sense. And also Kuch, top five here in 2014. So he is a guy that did play well at this course, at least the last time that they were there. Anybody else kind of stand out on your radar that you may be taking a little bit more of a look at?
Well, current form and everything we've seen from him, it's been nothing short of remarkable. I mean, the price is nauseating at 20-1, but Francisco Molinari's won three times around the world in his last eight starts, including a major. And he just walks up, hits it down the middle fairway. I mean, it's nothing flashy, but, you know, Molinari's current form at 20-1 is certainly a guy you consider. I think out of the gate here, I think, again, like I said, I look at a guy like Kuchar. And how about Tommy Fleetwood? 30-1's a pretty decent number on Tommy Fleetwood. I mean, that's an overlay to me. In terms of a guy that's, you know, on the leaderboard all the time. He's another guy that's very good off the tee. Yeah, DJ, Justin Thomas, Koepka, Day, these guys hitting a million miles. You know, they're the power brokers here. But if they are not hitting fairways, it's not going to be a walkover for them. And, oh, by the way, there's a motivation aspect with this too. You know, those guys have the big cushion. When you look at the guys at the top of the list in order for points, you know, you're looking at Dustin Johnson, Justin Thomas, Brooks Koepka. Well, the three of the longest hitters right there. The other, Rose is four, Bubba Watson's five, Day six. Webb Simpson's all of a sudden up to number six. He's pretty accurate off the tee. Molinari's number seven. I'll throw two at you that I would a shot at maybe to win the FedEx Cup at a balloon number. And that would be Patrick Cantlay and Xander Schauffele. You know, Schauffele at 60-1. And don't forget him at East Lake last year. So if you project down the road, know he likes East Lake in Atlanta. And if he can somehow get hot here in the playoffs, get himself in the top five, you know, anyone that's in the top five, when you get to East Lake, if they win the tournament, they win the FedEx Cup, why not take your shot now and project down the road with a guy that knows how to play there?
Cantlay 40-1 at five dimes to win the FedEx Cup. Xander Schauffele 60-1 to win the FedEx Cup over there. And one last thing I want to touch on here real quickly, Brian, I don't want to keep you too long, is that you know, you mentioned this already, that the top 100 move on, then it's the top 70, then it's the top 30 here for these four FedEx Cup events. So while these guys want to win, while they want to get that payday, and there are 2,000 FedEx Cup points to the winner for this one, there's also a little bit of strategy involved once you get to Saturday and Sunday, where maybe you won't be as aggressive to keep moving on to the different tournaments, or maybe you won't be as aggressive to avoid falling back and giving up too many of your points. And that could be relevant for somebody like you, because I know that you like to bet, you know, in tournament futures, where you see how a guy looks on Thursday or Friday and then decide to fire at that point. So there is also that strategic element to it here this weekend as well.
Oh, there's no doubt. I got a bad taste in my mouth, you know, heading into the weekend. I bet the CT Pan kid, and he had that tournament in his back pocket, hit an OB on 18. It was sickening. You know, but that's one of those things where you're watching the tournament midstream, and you can identify a guy that hit the ball great, and he just coughed it up trying to win his first tournament. He hit an OB on 18. But as you're watching the event, you look where guys stand on the leaderboard. You know, a lot of times, Adam, and we've seen it, that's the difference a little bit with golf when you're betting this stuff. We talk about motivation in the preseason. You know, where you stand on the leaderboard dictates your motivation. So some guy that's three or four back on Sunday, believe me, you get a quality guy, in the 15, 20 to 1 range that just literally knows he's got to go low. And because he's going low, if he gets off to the good start and he keeps going and gets some momentum, then all of a sudden you got the guys at the top that are protecting a lead, and they're shooting at the middle of greens. If that guy in front of them keeps going, and all of a sudden you spent the first seven holes shooting at the middle of greens, and all of a sudden you got to flip a switch, that's not an easy thing to do.
Good insights into the golf betting market from Brian Blessing, the host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline. Brian, how can our listeners take advantage of those two programs that you do?
The shows are all arcradio.com. You can listen live on the app KSHP Las Vegas. And we'll be doing a couple of videos for Bang the Book today, Adam. We're going to get them up. And ironically enough, it's almost like you were Kreskin here. We'll be doing videos on week three of preseason football and the Northern Trust and the FedEx Cup playoffs. So we'll get a couple of videos for you at Bang the Book. And you can follow me on Twitter at Brian Blessing.
Definitely looking forward to those. You can find those on our YouTube page. Just search Bang the Book. And as Brian said, at Brian Blessing on Twitter. Brian, always a pleasure. Thank you so much, sir. We'll talk to you again next week.
Adam, it's always fun, bud. Have a good one.
Always enjoyable there. A veteran season handicapper in Brian Blessing, the host of Sportsbook Radio and Vegas Hockey Hotline. Love chatting that golf market. I know it's not everybody's cup of tea, but a lot of good opportunities out there. And again, as we talk about all the time, you want to have the most diversified portfolio as a handicapper that you can possibly have. Look to take advantage of all of those different edges that are available to you. One more guest here on this Tuesday edition of Bang the Book Radio. That is professional handicapper Rolf Michaels from WagerTalk.com. Rolf, how's it going today, man?
You know, it's going great. I am not a golf handicapper, but I certainly enjoy watching golf and hacking it around on occasion. So as you guys are talking, I'm logging in and making a few plays, so I appreciate it.
No problem. Glad to hear it. And, man, I've only gotten out a handful of times here this summer. It's just been crazy busy with everything. And, again, the accelerated timelines for football kind of throw off the summer a little bit for me. But I like to go out there and you know, take a few swings, but mostly I just like the day drink.
Yeah, you know, it's that's the problem in Vegas is even though it's a dry heat at 115, the day drinking is out when you golf out here in the summer. But I'll tell you what, you get hell of great deals on tee times. Probably, you know, the same course you're paying $25 on now when it's August and 115, you're paying $150 in October.
All right, Rolf, let's chat some NFL preseason here for week three. And we touched on this with Brian Blessing in our previous segment. We'll see what kind of follow-up thoughts you have or maybe some different types of opinions here. You know, we talked about the dress rehearsal, and again, for our listeners out there, playing the Bang the Book radio drinking game, make sure you enjoy that here this week. But the dress rehearsal is, you know, one of those things where it feels like every coach is now doing it differently. We've already seen, and we talked about this in the previous segment, that Green Bay will not send Aaron Rodgers out there. It'd be surprising to see Bill Belichick send Tom Brady out there for more than a series or two, if he plays at all. seems like the motivations for the dress rehearsal here, because of the injury concerns, I have gotten a little bit different over the last few years.
Boy, I can't agree with you more, Adam. You know, it used to be that every coach would ramp up, play their starters a first half, maybe for a series or two in the third, with the exception of Tennessee. They would always have a fourth game dress rehearsal. But it has changed, and I don't think we see the normal traditional dress rehearsals now. The teams with veteran quarterbacks know they don't need that third game. It doesn't mean as much to them. You know, Brady played almost the first half in game two. I agree with you. We may see him very little. There's teams on the opposite end. You know, the L.A. Rams didn't play golf at all against Baltimore, didn't play him against Oakland. So he hasn't seen any action. So you have to expect him to see action. So like everything else, it is a fluid situation when you're handicapping. While history is a great tool to emulate what you're going to bet on this week, you cannot bet your plays on them. It's the knowledge that you learn this week. It's the information that you're reading from NFL.com, from the local newspapers, from the tweets, and it's just being on top of the information and having as much knowledge as you can.
Regarding the Los Angeles Rams here, pulling this from ESPN.com, they were asking Sean McVay during his media availability about Jared Goff and Todd Gurley playing in the preseason. And all he would say is, I would say there's a possibility, but I think those guys would both tell you that they want to play. So you have to read between the lines a little bit of that statement from McVay. And what that tells me is he's going to throw his players a bone. He's going to let Goff and Gurley get some activity here this week against Houston. But to me, I think it's going to be very, very limited. So that's a very important part of the handicapping process every week in the preseason, but certainly here in week three. And we've already seen some line moves. Cleveland's up to a 4-point favorite against Philadelphia because we know about their quarterback situation. Oakland's a touchdown favorite over Green Bay now because DeShone Kizer has not looked good in the preseason, and Aaron Rodgers is not going to play at all this week. Derek Carr didn't play a whole lot last week, so you figure he'll play a little bit more this week. It's such an important thing for you to figure out. You know, there's a lot of work and research that goes into the preseason. And, you know, I've seen things about, well, you only play the preseason if you're a degenerate and all this kind of stuff. There are wagering opportunities out there. There are profitable money-making opportunities out there in the preseason, as long as you're willing to put in the time and the work. And this week is no different from either of the first 2 weeks.
Adam, I'll say it again. It's the only time in sports when you can bet on a team and a head coach that want to win a game.
Rob, still there?
Against it. Yeah, I'm here.
All right. We seem to have lost Rolf Michaels here on today's program. We'll see if we can get him back. I don't know if maybe a little headset issue or something like that. But, you know, again, it's one of those things where, as I talked about in that previous segment with Brian, you want to be proactive instead of reactive. If you're reading into these situations, if you're looking for these spots where you think teams are going to do things a certain way, get out in front of it. Get out there, get in front of the line move, get in front of that sentiment, and then you certainly would hope that you've got a little bit of line value at that. We've got Rolf back on the air here. Rolf, you there?
Yeah, hey, I apologize, guys. Not sure what happened there. But, you know, preseason we talked about, some people say you have to be a degenerate to gamble.
All right, seem to be having sound issue here with Rolf Michaels on today's show, unfortunately, and you're not really sure what we can do at this point in terms of trying to get back on the program. And you know, it's just, obviously, with doing this live, we certainly run into this situation every now and then where, you know, things just kind of pop up and maybe don't work out the way that we would hope. But in any event, you know, like I said, getting out in front of these line moves is so very important here at this time of the year, because you have to understand that coaches are going to do things differently. They are going to do things based on, you know, either what their mentors have done in the past or what has worked for them in the past. And some of them are predictable, but some of them will change their spots. And of course, you look at teams that are very good now, like a Falcons, like an Eagles, something like that. Once you get to a certain point, you make that Super Bowl run, you win a division, whatever the case may be, you're going to view the preseason differently. Once you're an established team, you're going to view things a little bit differently. We'll see if we got Rolf back on the air here. Rolf, you there?
Yeah. I could hear you before, Adam. So I'm...
Rolf, you there?
Adam? Yeah, you there?
All right. Yeah, I'm here. Sorry about that. I kept hearing
a muted and unmuted voice on my back end, and I could hear you fine, but obviously you couldn't hear me. But I'm back, and I enjoyed your little continuing on of the preseason football. I could hear you and hear you well, and I agree with your sentiments.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on with this thing. And again, like I said, I mean, it's challenging for us because I really don't think that Blog Talk Radio is the best use of our podcast resources here. But because we have so many guests that call in using cell phones and the way that Blog Talk Radio is set up, it's just the most user-friendly for our guests. And obviously, the guests make the show. Maybe some people would disagree with that because they like me, but I think the guests ultimately do make the show here. So, Rolf, as we try to put that in the past, preseason thoughts this week that you're really keyed in on, any angles, any, you know, line moves that are catching you off guard, anything like that?
Well, you know, it's still early for me. A lot of my plays are done later once I read the coaches' quotes. But you do have to look at situations and where teams are. You know, Baltimore is a team that jumps out to me. You know, I played Baltimore early when they were a dog against Indianapolis. I got the win last night. Unfortunately, some people that played them late didn't, or fortunately if you bet the Colts. But, you know, Baltimore's in a situation where they played the Hall of Fame game. That was their third game. And now they play 5 days later on a second road trip. So they were at Indianapolis all week. They practiced with the Colts. They had spirited practices. They were on the road for 4 days. Now they're going home. They're going to have two practices, then they're going to load back up and make another road trip. So, you know, those are the situations where I don't think you're going to play your veterans on short weeks. So you have to look ahead week three and week four schedules. You know, and as far as head coaches, while head coaches are important, you also have to look at the coordinators because, you know, a situation like the Patriots with Patricia as their defensive coordinator were last in the NFL last year in preseason yards and last in the NFL over the last 3 years. Well, I'll tell you what, they're number three this year with defensive sack percentage. They're playing a different type defense under a new DC. So while coaches are important, also look at the coordinators because they make a big difference on how the team prepares each week and how the team plays for preseason action.
That's a really excellent point, and I want to follow up with that because I remember when we were looking ahead to week one of the preseason, you mentioned there are 18 new offensive coordinators out there, and if this truly is the dress rehearsal week, you know, how much of a handle do the number ones have in these offenses? And they certainly don't have a big handle in game conditions in terms of practices and scrimmages and all that kind of thing. They're obviously going through the work and understanding the playbook and all that, but in game conditions, they don't really have a whole lot of exposure to what that new OC is looking to do yet. I kind of wonder if maybe, and obviously this is a very challenging thing because you have to avoid the landmines of the helmet rule. I sort of wonder if the offenses by and large on those teams with new coordinators do struggle a little bit here this week with that enhanced sense of urgency to get everybody on the same page before the regular season.
I'll tell you what, a lot of people don't look at preseason stats. I do. I'm a huge fan of preseason stats, and let me just point out a couple of them. The worst teams in the league this year, yards per game diff, Arizona, the LA Rams, and Tennessee. Well, Arizona won a game the first week because they were plus three turnovers, but they're minus 122 yards per game. The LA Rams are minus 121 yards per game. Those are clearly the worst two teams in the NFL preseason, but I look at them completely different. We know McVay and the Rams haven't played anyone. I don't care about their minus 121 yards per game because they don't. I am concerned with Arizona getting outgained by 122 yards per game because they have a new coaching staff, because they have an old quarterback that's taking over, because they have a bunch of new quarterbacks, including a rookie. So when you look at that situation, you say, well, you know, I am looking to play against Arizona because they just have not matched up against competition. The other thing you have to look at are teams that have played great allowing first downs. The LA Chargers, Baltimore, and Oakland, all three are allowing less than 15 first downs per game. Now, there's only been two games or three in the Baltimore sense, but that shows you how they want to play. If you watch the Baltimore game last night, again, same head coach with Harbaugh, but Don Wink Martindale is a new DC. He was a linebacker coach there. I've heard numerous players talk about how he's freed up the defense, how he's let him play. And they did it again last night. It's a much freer offense. They're going to be more aggressive. While everyone says they're going to be more aggressive going into the season, not everyone always is. That's the line if you're a DC, well, we're going to be more aggressive. Well, no kidding. But he is more aggressive. He's allowing his players to play. So the other thing is sacks. Teams that get sacks in preseason are gold. New England, Chicago, Indy, Seattle, and Jacksonville all have a sack percentage over 12. Those are the teams I look at week three because, number one, you're either getting a great rush with four guys or you're blitzing in the preseason, and teams that blitz in the preseason win in the preseason. Four teams that have a sack percentage under 2.0, Detroit, Houston, Dallas, and Kansas City. Again, teams that are very vanilla, they're going to rush three. Sometimes they may rush four. They're not going to send the blitz. So those are the type of stats you want to look at after weeks one and two as you're making adjustments into week three.
You know, it's interesting you mentioned Matt Patricia earlier on in that little blurb there. And now Matt Patricia, the head coach of the Detroit Lions, a team that's not getting pressure in the preseason. So that seems like that could be a running theme for Detroit as long as he's the head coach, since it was something that was a problem for them in New England. So good angle there. I think that's something that we can definitely file away in the back of our minds here for the future. All right, let's transition over to the college football side here. And I want to start by talking about these week zero lines that are out there. We've got four games coming up this weekend. Duquesne and UMass, one of them. Prairie View, A&M, and Rice, another one. But then we have two FBS matchups. The first one, Wyoming and New Mexico State. And we actually saw this number go down from 4 to 3.5 here early on in the week. I believe that happened last night. Rolf, I don't know about you, but I don't understand that move. I've got Wyoming 7.5-point favorite. Kyle Hunter, who we talked to on yesterday's show, had Wyoming 6.5. Is this one moving away from your number as well?
My power ratings had this one 9. You know, you look at New Mexico State, and yes, they made a bowl game for the first time in 57 years. But, you know, when you're replacing starters, there's a different level of starter. You look at New Mexico State, and they have to replace their quarterback, who was their number two all-time passer. They also have to replace their running back, Larry Rose III, who was their all-time number two rusher and could have played in the SEC. He was that good. When you have to replace that much on offense, and this is a team that only had 8 coaches in spring and summer practice. They just hired the final 2 coaches. They didn't even have enough money to hire a full coaching staff to teach these kids. You know, this is a Wyoming staff that built North Dakota State. This is his 5th year. Took him from 2 wins and 3 wins to 8 wins each of the last 2 years. The best defense in the conference. You know, yes, they're replacing Allen, a quarterback who was a high draft choice and may start in the NFL, but he still completed only 57% of his passes. I like Wyoming.
So this is weird to me. I mean, I don't know if this is market manipulation from people that like to massage the numbers a little bit, because limits are still low here early on in the week. We'll reach higher limits on probably Wednesday or Thursday. And then, of course, once we get to Saturday, game day limits will be the highest that they're going to be. I don't know if this is just market manipulation, because it feels to me like nobody that I talk to has this number around 3.5 or 4 or even lower than that to actually bet on New Mexico State. So I'm trying to figure out the nature of this line move, and it's rare that I'm as perplexed about one as I am here. I don't know. It's too early for the public to get involved and fade Wyoming because they don't have Josh Allen. So I don't know what's going on with this number. It makes me feel like I'm missing something. And that's always a concern early on in the year, because you do all your research, you set up your power ratings, you want to be confident in them, but then something like this happens and you kind of wonder, am I missing something? So I'm just very perplexed at what's going on with this number right now.
Well, I'm confident in my numbers. I'm confident I'm up to date with the information that's out there. And so I don't worry about where the line is. It's basically, it's value to me. You know, the lines put out there by bookmakers that are trying to find an equal line. Yes, New Mexico State won their bowl game last year. You know, yes, Wyoming loses Josh Allen, but I think the Josh Allen effect is huge. But to me, you know, I don't worry about week one. I don't guess. If you're making your numbers and you've done the work and you're confident of your number, I don't worry about where the Vegas number is. I'm happy to bet into it. If I think it's wrong by more points, I'm happy to bet more into it. I think Wyoming's the play, period.
All right, let's go to game 293, 294 here. I think this one's a far less compelling handicap. Maybe you have a different take on it than I do. Hawaii and Colorado State. Hawaii on the mainland, in altitude, in Fort Collins. This number is 14, basically market-wide. Bookmaker, the only one showing 14.5 here. And again, obviously these week zero and week one lines have been out since late May. So there's been a little bit of initial action into them. They've largely sat stale and dormant, with the exception of adjustments for suspensions and injuries and things of that sort. But Colorado State laying 14 here. And this is a team with a rebuilt offense, a coach that's still in the hospital. This is a commentary, really, on how bad Hawaii is more than anything.
Well, there were two teams in the FBS last year that had a 3,500-yard passer, a 1,400-yard receiver, and a 1,400-yard rusher. Those two teams were Oklahoma State and Colorado State. Well, Colorado State loses all three of those players. They only return 9 players back. Now, yes, Hawaii is bad. Hawaii is still not decided on their quarterback. They're going to the run and shoot this year, and they have 3 quarterbacks, 1 a sophomore and 2 freshmen that are battling for the job. He's probably going to play multiple quarterbacks. But I'll tell you what, this is a game where I clearly have an opinion on it, and it's on the total. The total has climbed. It opened at 55. It's up to 58. People think the run and shoot means you're going to put up a lot of points. Well, I'll tell you what. The run and shoot is a very difficult offense to get going the first year, especially with a new quarterback, especially with an underclassman quarterback. You also have a brand new coaching staff in Hawaii. I think they had 6 new assistants this year. You're traveling again. You don't have that effect with the Hawaii travel. But the most important thing in this game, it's a conference game. You're not going to see weird flea flickers, and you're not going to see double reverses. This is a conference game that both teams are trying to start 1-0 in the standings and 1-0 in the conference standings. Colorado State's offense, again, losing their top 3 players. They have 5 back on the defensive side. They did play well at home later on down the stretch. Besides that Boise State game where they gave up 59 points, they only allowed 16 to Wyoming and 14 to San Jose. San Jose was the team that ran the most plays per game last year. I clearly have a play this week. This will be a customer play. These guys will get it for free now, and it's on the under 58 or 58.5. Being the conference game, being the new offense, being Mike Bobo has been in the hospital the last 7 days. The OC will take over. That makes the play calling even tougher, having the play calling and the responsibilities of the head coach if he doesn't make it. He's in the hospital with it's numbing of the feet that has to do with diabetes, and they're not sure if he's going to be out yet. But either way, he hasn't been there for the prep this week. I clearly, again, have a play in this game, and it's on the under 58 or 58.5.
One last thing I want to ask you about then with regards to this game, and this is something we touched on a little bit yesterday and something I want to get your thoughts on before we transition over to the Sun Belt. When you've got a game, and this is a relatively high total. I mean, for college football, it's not a high total, but it's a fairly high total in the upper 50s and a spread of 14. And when you think it's going to be a low-scoring game, help our listeners out a little bit here with this, because you have to understand that when you've got a big spread and a either low total or a game you think is going to be low scoring, you have to adjust for that in your mind.
Oh, absolutely. You know, you talk about correlated parlays, and, you know, obviously if you like a 25 point or 30 point favorite, you're probably going to tend to bet over 70, because if you have a 35 point favorite and the total is 70, well, that means your opponent just has to score 17.5 points or more for you to win that game and cover. This is a situation that, because I like the under, that makes me think I'm going to like Hawaii. Well, I really don't like Hawaii in the side. If I had to bet a side, it would be on the Rainbow Warriors, because you look at 58 as the total and 14 as the spread. So that leaves you 44 points. You divide it in half, 22. Well, if Hawaii is going to score 22 points, Colorado State would have to score 36 for the game to go over. Well, I already told you, I don't think Hawaii is going to score 22 points. I don't think Colorado State's going to score 36. So if Colorado State's going to score 30 or less or 28, that means Hawaii has to score two touchdowns. So when you're looking at those low totals, most of the time you're going to be looking at the dog if it's a significant dog. So anytime you have a 3, 3.5, 4-time difference in the line, again, you're going to look at the underdog if you like the under, the over if you like the favorite.
And, of course, this is relevant to week one and really weeks 2, 3, and 4 of the regular season as well. For example, you've got Western Kentucky and Wisconsin. That's a Friday game there in week one. Wisconsin's 34.5-point favorite with a total of 51. So you will see games like that as we go throughout week one, and we'll talk about those on next week's show. So, Rolf, I wanted to touch on the Sun Belt Conference here, and I know that there's a future that you really like in this league, so I'm definitely looking forward to that. Does anything change for you regarding the Sun Belt, regarding your preparation for the conference, with the fact that they have divisions now and a conference championship game?
No, you just have to. When you're evaluating your win totals in the Sun Belt, and when you're betting a team to win the Sun Belt, like every other conference now, you have to look at the crossover games. You're going to play your division opponents, and you're going to play a few of the crossover guys. You know, an example last year is the top three teams this year in the Sun Belt are App State, Arkansas State, and Troy. That's clear. I mean, that's clear cut as can be. But last year, one of them didn't play the other two. Arkansas didn't play App State or Troy. Well, if last year were like a crossover year, that's a huge difference. If you're not playing the top two teams in the division, no wonder you were number one in the Sun Belt at 150 yards per game in conference action, because you didn't play the top two teams. So it makes a big difference when you're handicapping. You look at your divisions, you power rate your divisions, and then you look at the crossover games, and there's a big difference in schedules being played from one team in a division to another.
And an important thing about power rating here, and specifically when you look at a conference like the Sun Belt, which, look, overall in the grand scheme of the 10 conferences plus independents, this is the weakest conference in college football. And that's not a knock on the Sun Belt. It just is what it is. You've got an Alabama team that the best team in the SEC, best team in the country, 96.5. Ohio State, best team in the Big Ten, top five team in the country, 93. Florida Atlantic, best team in Conference USA, by a pretty decent margin, no less. They're a 77 in my power ratings. When you go to the Sun Belt, Arkansas State is the top team that I have power rated in this league, and they're a 68.5. So as you're putting your power ratings together, you have to understand that if you're using that scale of, 4 to 10 for the position groups, 5 to 15 for the quarterbacks, the line, and the coaches, or however you set it up, understand that, yes, it has to be relative to the conference strength, but also relative to the overall strength. So, for example, the top quarterback in the Sun Belt is not going to be a 15 in your quarterbacks category just because they're the top quarterback in the Sun Belt. Top quarterback in the Sun Belt may be 11.5 or 12, something like that. So if you do your own power ratings, it's important to keep that relativity in mind.
Adam, what was your difference between Florida Atlantic and Arkansas State?
I have Florida Atlantic as 77, and I have Arkansas State 68.5.
Okay, I have Florida Atlantic 79 and Arkansas State 71, so we're very close. I have an 8-point difference. You have 8.5, so right on there. And, right behind it, you look at the bottom, though, the difference with the Sun Belt, you got decent teams with those top three, but the bottom three or four teams are, in the bottom 10 or 15 in the entire FBS.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly where I have them. Like, Texas State's the worst for me, 47.5. They're 127th. In my power ratings. So, yeah, again, I mean, you have to do this on a relative scale. So if you are somebody interested in doing college football power ratings, you still have time to do that, certainly for this year, but keep that in mind for next year, where you have to do this relative, not just to the teams in the conference, but also relative to the country as a whole. So, Rolf, Arkansas State is the top team here in the Sun Belt for you?
Well, I basically took the top three teams and I broke them down. And, you want to talk about talent and top heavy talent in a division or in a conference. The All Sun Belt team this year has 23 players on it. They count 12 on offense because they have two running backs, three receivers, and a tight end. of those 23 first teamers, six are on Arkansas State, six are on Troy, five are on Appalachian State. 17 of the 23 first team all-conference players are on those three teams. You know, you look back now, Arkansas State was a plus 150 yards per game. That was by far the best in the Sun Belt. But again, they didn't play those two opponents. They do return 12 starters. They do have the quarterback back, the first team conference all quarterback. So yes, I have them as the best team. And if you look what they did last year, you know, you go back and look what they did yards per game, and well, how could they be plus 150 yards per game and finish with the record they did behind Troy? Well, they lost to Troy at home last year, but they had a 606 to 293 yard edge. They had over a 300 yard edge against Troy, but they lost to him by three or four because of some turnovers. So because of that revenge, because they have him again this year, because of the 12 returning starters, because of having the best quarterback in the conference, I do have Arkansas State as the best team.
Now, who's your second best team? You mentioned Appalachian State and Troy pretty close together there on that first team list. Who's higher for you in your power ratings then? Or are they the same?
Well, you know, I have them 1 point a difference. I have Appalachian State at 70, just 1 point behind Arkansas State. So when I'm talking best team, I'm talking, you know, in my rankings, but it's only 1 point away. So if any of the other teams won, I wouldn't be surprised. I have Appalachian State at 70 and Troy at 69. App State returns 11 starters from a team. But, you know, the difference is when I look at Appalachian State and Troy, and not that, you know, I'm going to make one team higher in my power ratings because they have a better schedule. But when I'm making my conference predictions, and I do that just not for my customers, I do that for me to know at the beginning of the year where I had these teams rating, where I figured they would win the conference or the division. Well, why do I do that? Well, because sometimes you just underestimate a coach. Sometimes a coach just continues to play better than you expect. Solich is a guy for Ohio. I used to always have Ohio lower than everyone in the MAC, and he always continued to outperform the talent he had. So I do my rankings, and I do my division rankings because I want to know where I had these teams in my mind at the beginning of the year. I'll reevaluate them later in the year to see if I was right. Appalachian State, like I said, with their 11 returning starters, well, they have 11 returning starters, but they only had 13 last year, so they're just a couple below average. And they host Troy in that final game, so I do have them winning that side of the conference, beating Troy in that final home game at home. Little and redundant there, home game at home.
Just to clarify here, one of the things – you'll hear some differences in the numbers here. Like, for example, Rolf has Troy at a 69. I have Troy at 65.5. But Rolf's scale, his top team is at 100. That's Alabama, of course, because Alabama's the top team in everybody's power ratings. Alabama's a 96.5 for me. So he starts at 100, goes down from there. I do mine on a scale of 100, and Alabama's the closest to it at 96.5. So we're in effectively the same range here. Even though we have different numbers based on the scales that we use for our power ratings, we're basically in the same range here with those three teams. I've got Arkansas State 68.5. Appalachian State 66.5, Troy 65.5. So 3 point difference there between the top three teams in this league. But it is interesting to look at Appalachian State, where, you know, they've got a good running back in Jalen Moore, takes over for the second season here with Marcus Cox gone. He was the all-time leading rusher from 13 to 16. Now you've got the second year of Jalen Moore being the front guy, but you don't have Taylor Lamb anymore. And this is also a thing for Troy where they lose their second all-time leading passer in Brandon Silvers. So these two teams both replacing four-year starters at quarterback, that's not an easy thing to do in a conference like this, is it?
No, especially when Taylor Lamb is the third all-time passing leader for Appalachian State. And, you know, for those that think Appalachian State started when the FBS, think back of Armani Rogers and beating Michigan. So, you know, this is a program that won the SoCon I don't know how many times. I mean, you know, it probably went to 10 times in 20 years when them and Georgia Southern went back and forth. And I think they have, what, four or five national championships, at least three FCS national championships. So this is a long and rich history Appalachian State has. And to be the third time, to be the number three passing leader and a four-year starter gone in Tyler Lamb, it makes a huge bit of difference.
All right, so Appalachian State, 1 point ahead of Troy for you, but let's talk about the Trojans a little bit more here, because the job that Neil Brown has done is not getting enough love. The job he's done coming over from Kentucky to Troy, not an easy place to recruit. You're in the heart of SEC country. You're not going to get anybody that wants to go to Alabama or Auburn or LSU or Georgia or any of those types of places. Yes, there's still talent around, but you really have to dig hard to find it. They've won 21 games over the last two seasons. They've only allowed 23 sacks in the last 2 years. But now Brandon Silvers is gone. They're replacing running back Jordan Chun. What do you do about a team like Troy from a power rating standpoint? I know you have got that 1 point behind Appalachian State, but you have to have concerns about this team, right? Is this one that you may look to adjust quickly, or do you give Neil Brown the benefit of the doubt and say he can coach these kids up?
Well, you know, I look at it and you give him credit for what he's done. You know, last year they had 14 starters back. 2 years ago he had 13. 3 years ago in his first year when he went 4-8, he had 13. So he's in the exact same range where he's been each of the last 3 years. And that's what I look at. Yes, he lost his number two all-time passer in Brandon Silvers, had over 10,000 yards. But, you know, the one thing when I look at Troy is this. I look at Troy, you look at the talent, you look at what they did at plus 70 yards per game, that was number two in conference play, and you're 11-2, but to me, they're more like an 8 or 9 win team in my mind. The reason being, you look how fortunate they were last year. 3-point win New Mexico State, 5-point win against Akron, 3-point win against LSU, 3-point win against Idaho, 7-point win at Arkansas State when I said they got outgained by 300 yards. They won all five games that were decided by a touchdown or less. That rarely happens back-to-back years. When you're fortunate 1 year and you win those close games, they tend to regress back to the median next year. So, you know, while they have 11 wins, I clearly don't think they'll be in that category, and the reason is most of those fortunate wins, I think, will even out, especially without the quarterback that you're going to have. And, you know, they had a JC running back in who they loved in Kevin Perkins. He was a sophomore, and he was listed as the starter ready to go. He is out for the year. He just got dismissed last week. So that's another little notch down in them for them.
So you've got Appalachian State losing a four-year starter. You've got Troy losing a four-year starter, which brings me to a future that I know you played already, a future that I know you really like, and I definitely want to give you the floor to talk about the team from Statesboro, the Georgia Southern Eagles.
Yeah, you know, Georgia Southern, 2-10 last year, but you look at what they've done. They're returning to their roots and their rush attack. You know, they've gone through transition. They had you know, Munkin was their coach bringing him in. They had Willie Fritz when they moved up to the Sun Belt. They went 9-3 and 9-4. Fritz, of course, moves on, you know, and then Chad Lunsford comes in and he takes his lumps. He goes 5-7 the first year, had talent, but switched over the offense. And then he goes 2-10 last year. Well, 2-10, a lot of 2-10 is because your last 3 years, Willie Fritz brought in a lot of JUCOs. So those JUCOs were gone, and you didn't have any replacements for them. You had no young kids that got experience. That's the problem when you bring in some JUCOs. You can't build that pipeline of talent. Well, for 3 years, they only had 12, 12, and 10 starters. Last year, only 10 starters were back for that 2-10 year. So you can understand the correlation. Now with 18 returning starters, 9 on offense, including the quarterback, 9 on defense. The team was only minus 7 yards per play in conference action last year. That's a 500 team, yet they went 2-6. They lost their close games. They lost an 8-point game to New Mexico State, a 4-point game to Georgia State, a couple other close games where they lost some turnovers or just made some mistakes late. Georgia Southern is the team that I think, you know, can make some noise. The problem is they play Appalachian State October 25th and they play Troy November 10th. I would have liked Georgia Southern much more. I like them already. Had they played those teams early without a quarterback, I would have loved to see a late September or an October game. I would have played much more on Georgia Southern. But Georgia Southern is my long shot pick. And, you know, when you look at my power ratings, if you say, well, how come Georgia Southern isn't in your top three? Well, actually, they're in my top. They're only fifth in my conference at 62.5, which is 8.5 behind Arkansas State. But why do I like them? Well, my power ratings are the talent on the field and what I can write on paper and make tangible. When I play out the best case scenario, I like Georgia Southern to pull a couple upsets and perhaps win the division. So two different things. Your power ratings are I'm on paper, I know what the talent has. And when you're making a couple flyer bets, it's if this team plays up to the best of its potential, this is what'll happen. So my power ratings don't reflect my optimism, but once the season gets underway, if they're going to play like I think they're going to, I then obviously would change my power rating numbers.
Well, and this is such a good example of looking to take positions on teams. And I talked about that yesterday on the show because I went through, I put together all my week one numbers, and what I found is that a lot of them are pretty good. They're within, you know, the normal range that I would expect, not crossing through too many key numbers or anything like that, except for the teams that I felt like I wanted to take some positions on. For me, I have Georgia Southern 12.5 points below Arkansas State. You have them 8 points below, I believe you said, 8 or 8.5, something like that. So that's a team that you've taken a position on that you think is going to be better than what I think. And that's what you want to do. You want to have the majority of your teams line up relatively close to the market because you don't want to be too far off on a lot of teams. But there are teams that you do want to take positions on and say, you know what? I like this team. I think this team can do something. So for you, one of those teams is Georgia Southern. For me, it would be somebody else. So definitely following along with that one for you. I hope that that's one that does come to fruition for you. And also, because somebody that I respect has this difference of opinion on this team of 4.5 points, I'm more likely to move my numbers quickly if you wind up being right. So, you know, again, you want to have your own positions, you want to trust in them, but you also want to see where the market has them and where other people you respect have them. And Georgia Southern is one of those teams to me where I will be quicker to adjust on them than I would be somebody else.
You know, one more note when you get to the Sun Belt, and you've heard me mention conference Sun Belt yards per game. I mean, when you're dealing with Sun Belt teams, you just have to throw out the year-to-date stats and only look at conference stats. The schedules vary so much with what these teams are playing. You know, a lot of these teams need cash, so what do? They have to play multiple Power 5 teams. You know, if you look at Arkansas State, well, why was their yards per game so good? Well, remember that Miami of Florida game got canceled. So their non-conference games were Nebraska, Arkansas, Pine Bluff, where, you know, you had a team like Georgia Southern that started off at Auburn, played a very good FCS team in New Hampshire and lost to them, and then they go to Indiana as well. So when you're looking at Sun Belt, you're even comparing them during the season, you know, CFB stats is a great stat where you can compare stats, and then you can click to the left and do conference-only stats. When it gets to October 1st and you start comparing teams because you're getting in conference play, make sure you're only clicking conference-only stats and not using year-to-date stats, especially with this conference. And by the way, for you Sun Belt fans, Adam, since 2014, the number one team, number one conference in all of football winning bowl games is the Sun Belt at 61%. They have 11 bowl wins since 2014. That's more than the American Conference, and that's more than the MAC. The American Conference since 2014 has 10 bowl wins in 27 attempts. The MAC has 6 bowl wins in 23 attempts. The Sun Belt an amazing 11 bowl wins in 17 attempts.
I love that stat. I mean, I call it the Fun Belt because I love the Fun Belt, and I love when they've got their standalone games where these kids get some exposure on ESPN. But that's one of those things where, you know, I don't want to be, you know, all sentimental and pull at the heartstrings here, the emotional appeals, but, you know, a lot of these kids aren't going to play football after this point. And if you play in Conference USA or the AAC or something like that, you get more exposure. You're a higher touted recruit. It just is what it is. These Sun Belt kids, though, they try their asses off in those bowl games. So that does make a lot of sense to me. Absolutely love that stat there from you, Rolf. So we talked about the East, where you've got Appalachian State and Troy, who are both very good. Georgia Southern, who could be an upstart kind of team. Georgia State, who was plus yardage in yards per game in conference, but and they did actually make a bowl game and win it last year. And then Coastal Carolina, a team that, you know, just making that FBS transition a couple of years ago. Let's look at the West. It's Arkansas State and then literally everybody else. Is there a challenger to the Red Wolves in the West Division?
No, it's the AFC East. And Arkansas State is New England. You know, you have ULM, ULL, South Alabama, Texas State. Texas State, ULL, South Alabama are my bottom three teams in the Sun Belt. And the only one up there is ULM, and I have ULM 7 points below, 7.5 points below Arkansas State. So I don't see any challengers. I think that Arkansas State has the clear path. You know, they host ULM, which is their only other real challenger. And even the ULL game that they play October 27th on the road, it's always tough to go down and play at Lafayette. But even the ULL game, they have 10 days of rest because they host Georgia State the week before that on a Thursday. So they're even getting extra rest for that game. I just think that, you know, of ULM, off a 4-8 season, they went 4-4. Again, this is a team where you look 4-8 and you go, oh, well, they're bad. But they went 4-4 in Sun Belt play. So they're a 500 team. It just so happens they played Southern Miss, Florida State, Auburn, and Memphis and lost all their non-conference games. But they do have 17 starters back. And I do like Kalib Evans. He's a quarterback that had a 17-6 ratio with a 61% completion percentage, and he was the number two rusher at almost 600 yards. He had 700 if you take off the sacks. So, you know, they're clearly the second-best team in the division in Matt Viator's third year. They're going to make some noise, but the way the schedule sets up and they have to play at Arkansas State, they host Troy, and the schedule's just not favorable for them. So I have them as the second-best team. I have them as a very good team. I do believe they'll get to 6 wins and go to a bowl after not having 6 wins since 2013. They've gone 4-8, 2-11, 4-8, 4-8. I do have them going 6-6, improving greatly, but that's all I can get them to.
This is pretty brutal for ULM. They open against Southeastern Louisiana in a game where we could have 100 points, and it wouldn't surprise me at all. 5 of their next 6 games on the road, including stops at Southern Miss, Texas A&M, Georgia State, Ole Miss, and Coastal Carolina, with the Chanticleers off of a bye. The home game in that stretch is Troy. So for ULM, the schedule is brutal. And then also on the west side here of the division, Louisiana with a new head coach, South Alabama with a new head coach, and then Texas State with Everett Withers, who just they just can't get enough talent there at Texas State to really be relevant in the conference. So tough side of the division in the East, not so much there in the West. Rolf, I know that there were a couple of things that you wanted to touch on here with regards to early season college football betting, week 0, week 1, some betting angles that you think could have a lot of value for our listeners out there. So the floor is yours, sir.
You know what? There's a couple things that I looked at, and you have to remember the college football season is so different. You know, I broke these angles down to weeks 1 through 4. So, you know, there's going to just be a lot of numbers here in the next 10 minutes. I'm just going to shoot some situations, but I just want you guys to listen. If you like the information, write it down, pay attention. But I went through scenarios and I wanted to know what actually happens when these things occur. And again, I'm going to give a shout out to Ed Meyer and killersports.com. The database is incredible. This is an information that I have. This is public information that our guys can go. And once they learn how to use the system, it's going to be great. But conference teams, weeks 1 through 4, You know, there's going to only be a handful of conference games, weeks 1 through 4. It's normally your non-conference schedule. There's a couple conference games. But conference home teams since 2015, the last three seasons, are only 43% weeks 1 through 4. The record, 54-71-3 against the spread. Home dogs, no better at all. You want to play conference favorites early in the year. Conference home dogs, weeks 1 through 4, 20-32-2, only 38.5%. Couple of week 1 angles. These are only week 1 going into week 2. This is since 2013. If you lose as a home favorite week 1, what happens week 2? Well, if you go on the road, you're 59%. Only 10-7. We've only had 17 situations. But again, a decent sample size. If you're at home, if you lose as a home favorite week 1 and week 2 you're playing at home again, you're only 7-11, 39%. So 59% on the road after losing as a home favorite, 39% at home. Well, what happens if you win away, if you win as an away dog week 1? If you pull the upset on the road as an away dog, week 2, if you're on the road again, you're only 2-3. We don't have enough sample size to prove everything. If you're at home, you are 10-5, 67%. So look for those week 1 teams that pulled the upset as an away dog. The next week at home, they're 10-5 against the spread. What happens weeks 1 through 4 if you're off a conference loss? We already know that the road conference team has done better weeks 1 through 4. Well, if you lose that conference game, if you go on the road, 15-15. It's a break even. You're going to find winning situations. But if you're off a conference loss and the next week you're at home, you're only 27-34-2, 44%. Again, 44% isn't great, but I think most people probably have the thought in their mind, if I lose a conference game and I'm home, I'm pissed off. I'm gonna roll this team because it's probably another non-conference team, but you're only 27-34. So again, something that surprised me, not a great number, but if I thought that scenario, I'm sure many of our listeners have that same thought and thought that scenario through. Two more, and we'll do some more next week. Weeks 1 through 4, after scoring 9 or less points, you know, many teams get shut out against these Power 5 teams. You're playing Alabama and you're a Sun Belt team. You know, you may not get the 10 points. Well, the week after scoring 9 or less points, you're 33-31 on the road, basically 500. But if you score 9 or less at your home, you're only 38%, 30-49-3, 38% against the spread. Again, I expected it better. I thought if you get shut out, you're back at home, you'd have a better performance. I was wrong. And lastly, what happens weeks 1 through 4 after scoring 50 points? Well, if you score 50 points and go on the road, you are 66-50-3, 57%. And again, another home record that's poor. If you score 50 and more points at home, if you score 50 or more points and the next week you're at home, this is only during weeks 1 through 4, you're 50-73-5, 40.7%. So again, just some scenarios, weeks 1 through 4 for college football. Again, not incredible numbers, but just situations I thought in my head and I wanted to be able to share to our listeners.
Well, and those are all important things there, especially some of those ones that kind of bust those narratives, sort of myth-busting types of things. And you always like to get information like that here on the program. So Rolf Michaels, professional handicapper over at wagertalk.com. What's going on over there? I know you guys had some big news yesterday.
Yeah, well, you know, we've taken over another site as well. And, excited about that, adding more handicappers to our repertoire. And, it's continued to grow. You know, Wager Talk's the company I'm very pleased with and happy the way to do business. And it's different than a lot of people. And, you know, for those that are following week 3 preseason, later today, make sure you check out the preseason guide. I'll have the team pages in rotation order. I'll have all the team and quarterback stats in. Week 3 is important to know how those backup quarterbacks did the first few weeks. If you have a backup quarterback that's done well and you know he's going to be playing the second half, those are the situations you look for. Those will all be available later today. Go to wagertalk.com, go to the Cal Sports page. You can download my College Football Game of the Year report. You can download my power rating guide. The first pitch for baseball is up every day, and the preseason week 3 guide will be up later today.
And you can follow Rolf on Twitter at CalSportsLV. Rolf Michaels, appreciate your time. Thank you so much for hanging in there with our technical difficulties today, and I'll talk to you again next week.
Thanks, Adam. Always a pleasure.
Always fun there to chat with Rolf Michaels, professional handicapper from wagertalk.com. And again, to our listeners out there, my apologies for that audio issue that we had during today's program. Coming up on our Wednesday edition of Bang the Book Radio, should have Brian Leonard, professional handicapper from wagertalk.com, join us. We'll talk about betting baseball here once football gets going, about some of the different things that you'll see out there in the market as the odds makers and the risk managers are paying more attention to the gridiron. They'll also take a look at a conference with him. I'm not sure which one we want to look at yet, but I'll check with him here today via email. Then also, I believe we'll have Ed Feng from the Power Rank join us once again, talking about some regression analysis handicapping for football for the upcoming season. So definitely looking forward to that. Thursday, Brad Powers and likely Tony George. And then Friday, we'll chat again with Lockie Lockerson, probably a pre-recorded segment there with him to finish up the Pac-12. And then we'll also see, maybe I'll do the Bettors Box on Friday or something like that. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.